of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight, in an hour-long membership drive special, I'm speaking with Michael H. Fox of the Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network about the cases of three women incarcerated here in Oregon, Carlin Eckloff, Tammy Traxtel, and Kaisha Johnson, all serving over 25 years for murders they did not plan or commit. It is shocking that our justice system enables such sentencing. The Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network supports overly charged, wrongfully convicted, and unfairly sentenced women. Michael Fox stopped in the studio to speak with me on September 16th while he was visiting women in Oregon. I asked him to begin by explaining the organization.
The Women's Criminal Justice Network, actually worldwide, grew out of my interest with wrongful convictions in Japan. My interest in wrongful convictions originally began with the case of a Japanese woman. And I heard her speak many years ago, and her case really fascinated me. And it drove me to think about why, and why are the police and prosecutors constantly harassing this woman, even after she's been found innocent? And then I began to come back and look at my own country, and what I saw here really scared me. I could see these same tactics being employed. And one day I began reading about the case of a woman named Carlin Eckloff, who is now incarcerated at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, just south of here. And her case was just so bad that I felt that I needed to do something. And I decided to make a website for her. And it was called Free Carlin Eckloff. Well, from there, I decided to start aiding other women. And eventually, the website just grew and grew, and now I have many different cases from women in many different countries. And it's no exaggeration to say that America probably has the worst record for wrongfully and unjustly convicting women.
The website, it's wcjn.org, and one of the things you have on there is a database of different cases of women who have been wrongfully convicted and a lot of links to different information about the cases and sections about certain crimes that the women are tried for more often than men. It's a great resource to check out different women who have been wrongfully convicted and also just to refresh your ideas about what justice is for women here in the United States. The organization grew out of a case that is here in Oregon. I wondered if you might start by telling us a little bit about...
Yeah, Carlin Eckloff, certainly. Carlin Eckloff, many years ago, was pretty much a homeless woman with three children. She was working as a waitress and serving drinks in bars and restaurants. And she was taken in by a customer of a restaurant where she was a waitress. And then she had a boyfriend of hers came up from California to visit. Well, the house got a little cramped with all these people in it, her children, the man she was sharing expenses with, and the boyfriend. Things became very tense, and one night, the man she invited up, who previously had a criminal record, took a gun and shot her housemate three times. The proper thing for Carlin to do at that time would have been to call 911. Call the police. But a woman with three children and no source of income doesn't always think very properly. And she decided to take off with this man, whose name is Jethro Tyner. And she traveled with him. She traveled with him back to California. At this time, she was abused very much by him. And she finally couldn't take it anymore. And after she was beaten up, she decided to call the police back in Oregon, in Springfield, and to get help. And they listened to her, and they came down, and they saw her, and she was beaten and bruised, and they interviewed her, but they really didn't offer any help at that time. They just took her statement. Then finally, she escaped. She traveled by herself and her kids. She somehow managed to make it to Salt Lake City, where the police did come to interview her again and bring her back to Portland. And they brought her back telling her that, well, we just need the information about this case because we want to solve it. They never told her that she was a suspect in the case. And they, in fact, interrogated her for 9 days. Now, at the beginning of the interrogation, she told the whole truth about her case. And finally, 9 days later, she confessed to stabbing the man who died with a plastic fork. Well, the body was eventually found. The body was not stabbed with a plastic fork. It certainly did not come up on the autopsy report. The body was found by mushroom pickers. The man had been shot in the head 3 times. And it seems as if the case was finished. Well, the question is, why is it that they went after Carlin? Why do they want to implicate her in this case? She didn't shoot anybody. She didn't kill anybody.
And the body clearly shows that she didn't actually stab the body.
Indeed, that's quite true. And then again, would a plastic knife or plastic fork, could you actually stab a body? That's another question. Well, she was tried by this prosecutor whose name was Hughie, who had just ridden on his laurels. He had prosecuted this woman, Diane Downs, I believe that's her name, shortly before, a woman who had been convicted of killing her own children. And he just decided to pounce upon Carlin because she was not the typical mother who lives in a house with her husband and her kids, but she was living with 3 children from different partners. She's a woman who's very much pro-life, but instead of offering help to such a woman, the forces of authority just decided to clamp down on her. She was offered a plea bargain, and this is one of the worst plea bargains I've ever heard of. She was offered a plea bargain of 10 years in 1995. Now, at that time, with good behavior, you would be out in 8 years, so she could have been out in 2003. The other offer was death. They prosecuted this as a capital case, and the prosecution did ask for death. So the alternative here is you will either cooperate with us or we will kill you. Now, what kind of a plea bargain is this? What does this say about criminal justice in Oregon?
That's really amazing.
Yeah, it's a very sad story.
Wow. And so then how, given that the evidence didn't show that she was actually involved with the murder, did she end up being the one that's behind bars? And what happened to the person who actually committed the crime?
Those are very good questions. How do you prosecute somebody who's innocent? Well, the easiest thing to do is you find somebody who knows her, somebody who's charged with a crime, somebody who's charged with a very heinous crime, and go and make a deal with that person. In this case, Carlin had an acquaintance. His name was Alvin Hope. Now, he had child abuse and sexual abuse allegations made against him by his own children. The prosecutor knew about this ahead of time. So the prosecutor made a deal with him, and this is very clear from my website. This was good research done by Anthony Bornstein, federal public defender in Portland. And he found that this man, Alvin Hope, escaped immediate charges for child abuse and child sexual abuse of his own children, allegations made by his own children, for testifying that he procured the handgun that was used in the murder. That's basically the tactics right there. The man who actually pulled the trigger, his name is Jethro Tyner, and he is on death row in Salem right now. And he's appealing his case.
No.
Hello, this is Karen, and I'm here with Amy. And we are in Pledge Central again, asking you to please call. We are two hosts of Prison Pipeline, and we bring you Prison Pipeline. We bring you stories. We bring you the news, voices from prisoners, both in and out of the prison system. And where else do you hear this type of programming on any radio in the Portland area or in the United States? And we would love for you to hear, give us a call right now, 877-500-5266, to show your support for our show. We are passionate about bringing you this information. Many of us have personal stories around incarceration and the criminal justice system, family members, friends, and that's why we do this show. We feel very passionate about educating people about these issues. And please show your support for Prison Pipeline. Again, 877-500-5266. Amy, how else can they contact KBOO?
Yeah, well, you can go online to kboo.fm. You can make a secure online pledge, or you can walk down to the station. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And your support is so important, no matter what you're able to give today. I mean, $10 a month, you could consider. That's $120 a year. That's a great way to start out. Definitely welcome new members who haven't yet supported, and also people who have supported, maybe throwing down a little bit more this pledge drive. You know, we thank you so much for your support. You really do keep us coming out over the airwaves. And like Karen said, this isn't the type of material that you hear anywhere else. And so we really appreciate, thank you so much for calling right now. That number is 877-500-5266. Thanks for your support of Prison Pipeline.
And yes, $5 a month or $10 a month, anything that you can pledge. We would love to hear. We would love to hear why you enjoy Prison Pipeline and what it means to you. We would love you to call 877-500-5266. I know I pour my heart and soul into our programs, and so does Amy and the rest of the hosts at Prison Pipeline, and we would love to hear from you. We would love to receive your support. Tell us why you enjoy Prison Pipeline and why this programming is important to you. Again, 877-500-5266.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm speaking with Michael Fox of the Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network about the case of Karlyn Eckloff, who was convicted of murder here in Oregon. The evidence in the case did not indicate that she was guilty of the crime. However, she was still found guilty by the jury. I asked Michael how the jury was convinced that Karlyn should be convicted.
Basically, what every prosecutor knows is that character defamation and character assassination works remarkably well. And it works remarkably well against women. The prosecutor managed to call Karlyn a biker bitch in his closing arguments. The defense objected, but the judge, who was clearly prejudiced against her, let it stay in the record. And because the jury was inflamed and the jury heard evidence which was incorrect, they came to the conclusion that she was guilty. And the judge sentenced her to two consecutive life terms. So that's 25 to life, plus 25 to life, plus 16 years. In his wonderful appeal to the federal district court, public defender Anthony Bornstein asked, how can you get two consecutive life sentences plus 16 years for one murder? Where is the logic in this? Where does this come from? So not only was she unjustly convicted, this sentence just defies imagination. It defies logic.
What has been done since her sentencing?
The case is being appealed, and Karlyn hopes that one day she will be freed. Perhaps the state will understand its mistakes. There's always a chance of commutation by the governor. That is another possibility, though. In the end, it's just better to win in the courts if possible.
So if a person listening to this show who's interested in Karlyn's case wanted to do anything for her, is there something that they would be able to do to bring light to this?
Oh, sure. Case? Absolutely. For any of the cases that I have, especially for Karlyn's case, if you contact me through the website, I will be happy to contact you. I respond to all messages. If you show some interest, please write in. Sometimes a lot of these people just want sympathy. If you just send them a card and say, I believe in you, you can go to the prison and visit her. You can write her. We sometimes have an online petition. Her and all the other cases that we have in Oregon and throughout the world, we welcome participation from people everywhere. The important thing is to shine the light on these cases and to be conscious of what's happening.
I asked Michael to tell us about conditions at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility where these women are being held.
Coffee Creek was originally designed as an intake center. An intake center is a place where prisoners are evaluated and diagnosed physically, mentally, to see which prison in the state they should be sent to. Oregon only has one prison right now, so all of the women who are at Coffee Creek get diagnosed and they're put into Coffee Creek. The essential problem of an intake center is that it is not built for long-time incarceration. It's built for short-term incarceration. So an inmate would be kept there 30 days. We have women at Coffee Creek who are living in cells with no windows, lifers in cells with no windows. Wow. This is just unbelievable. Other problems is that in a typical prison, well, in a women's prison, you might have a key and you're able to open the door and go out the door as you please. An intake center is not like that. Everything is automatic. So every 20 minutes, you have hundreds of metal doors opening like machine guns, ta-tan, 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 and then closing, ta-tan, 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 and opening, pa-pam, 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 and the inside of your head becomes like a machine gun. People become very stressed out, and it causes a lot of tension. Not only that, I believe it grates the nerves of the correctional officers working there and the staff as well. If you go to the men's prison in Salem, which I visit from time to time, they have activities for people to help reduce stress as well as to help these people to rehabilitate. They have all sorts of sports teams there. They have basketball teams, they have volleyball teams, they have baseball teams. There are no major sporting events at Coffee Creek, despite the fact that there are women doing major time there. There's one set of weights for the entire prison. There's no gymnasium as of such. And not only that, the yard where they have to walk is filled with dog wastes because they have a dog training program. This is a center with a lot of excess stress, which is not normal and which is atypical to a long-term prison. There are lights which shine in the hallways and do not go out at night. They give off a really strange hiss and people lose sleep. They're stressed out because they can't sleep very well. These are not conditions which you see in typical prisons. In an intake center or a jail where people are being observed all the time, these things are often used. They may be necessary. If you went to the men's prison, they have all types of goods for sale. They have leather wallets for sale. They have metalware. You have men who are working in metal shops, in wood shops, and they make some very beautiful things. There are women at Coffee Creek that are very good at bead making and at quilt making, yet there's nothing for sale there. These women's time are not being put to good use, and that really hurts people's minds. It hurts their heads. It also makes it problematic for the staff to deal with these people. Generally speaking, the Coffee Creek Correctional Center, the only women's prison in this state, really suffers from excessive confinement of human movement with the lack of sports activity, the lack of adequate working facilities, and it is a very stressed out place to be incarcerated and a very stressed out place to work. I've even been told that very good officers leave Coffee Creek because they just don't like working there. They want to work in a better environment. Incidentally, the head of the Department of Corrections is a Miss Collette Peters. And when she became the head of the DOC, myself and many other activists, attorneys, were very excited, hoping that we would see some changes, that she might even close down Coffee Creek and move the women to some other place. I believe there's an open prison somewhere in Salem in that area. She certainly knows of the problem, but so far nothing has been taken care of yet. We hope for more in the future. A few months ago, the showers at Coffee Creek were turned off. This was quite shocking. Are they shutting off the showers to take money? Most of the work the women do there is mopping up, sweeping floors, working in the kitchen, working in the infirmary. People get very dirty and they need to clean up. Women have other hygienic needs that men don't. Mm-hmm. If something like this had happened in a men's prison, you would have riots. Fortunately, the Department of Corrections saw their mistake and the showers were turned on.
How long were the showers off?
I would guess for a couple of months. I'm not sure.
Really?
But several
no
months.
Showers
Tuesdays
at all?
And Thursdays, there were no showers. Limited opportunities. If you were doing some really filthy work, they may have let you take it. But this was a major problem. And there's a well-known woman activist who threatened an online petition to decrease salaries in the DOC. Finally, the DOC came around, and now the women are able to shower every day. Coffee Creek was also in the newspaper a couple of years back. There were some bad cases of sexual abuse there. I believe that the prison now is taking new precautions to stop this sexual abuse. So in some ways, the prison has gotten better in that aspect.
And we are back at Pledge Central. This is Karen, and I'm here with Amy. And we want to thank, first of all, some restaurants who donated their food for our volunteers tonight. Bar Carlo at 6433 Southeast Foster Road. Little River Cafe, 0315 Southwest Montgomery. And Corbett Fish House, 5901 Southwest Corbett Avenue. Thank you so much for your donation. And we also have, for a contribution of a $60 pledge, we have note cards, a set of four, made by an artist on death row in San Quentin. And they are beautiful note cards. One is of a landscape called Undiscovered. There's another of San Quentin. And they are by artist James R. Scott. And again, he is on death row in San Quentin Prison. And for $60, you can get a set of four. Please give us a call at 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm. And Amy, you have something also to tell our listeners?
Yeah, another great way to support KBOO and pick up a nice thank you gift is by a $60 pledge. Again, it's for The Punishment Imperative. We have two copies of this book. It's The Punishment Imperative, The Rise and Fall of Mass The Rise and Failure of Mass Incarceration in America. And this is such an important issue, and shows like Prison Pipeline are ones that are talking about these types of issues that are going on here in America. So this is a really great gift that you can pick up as a thank you to thank you for supporting Prison Pipeline by calling 877-500-5266 or going online and making a secure donation at kboo.fm.
I like the way you said it the first time, The Punishment Imperative, The Rise and Fall. Yeah, I like that.
Instead Wish it was
of
a fall.
Instead of, yeah, The Rise and Failure of the Mass Incarcerations in America. And our phones, we are sitting by our phones here. Abani and Joe are here in the house waiting for your phone calls. Please give us a call, 877-500-5266. I'll say that slowly, 877-500-5266. KBOO.FM. Online, go and there's all kinds of donate now online. Our tip jar is there. And Amy, we're both hosts of Prison Pipeline. We would love to hear the phones ringing in support of Prison Pipeline. And you know, the prisoners in Oregon's state prisons, they do have jobs, but they do not make a lot of money. And if you appreciate programming, Prison Pipeline, or any other programming, we would love for you to call and make a donation on behalf of the prisoners, especially down along the I-5 corridor where they reach KBOO reaches the prisons along the I-5 corridor. The prisoners listen on their radios, and they don't listen online. They can't. They don't have access to computers sometimes. But play a donation. Call with a donation for a prisoner to. I know they do listen. I go into the prisons. They tell me they do listen. They listen to the music. They love the Saturday programming, jazz. The blues, rock, they love the public affairs programming. They do listen to KBOO, at least they tell me they do. You know, Amy, why was this particular program important to you, the program with Michael Fox tonight?
The show with Michael Fox is particularly important because we're talking about women that are here in Oregon, down in Wilsonville at Coffee Creek, and these cases are ones that are so important. And Michael, he said that he hasn't been able to get these stories out on other media sources. It's really difficult to get stories about wrongful convictions out there, and you're hearing about things that are going on right in our backyard. And like Karen was saying about how inmates do listen, if you have one who's in your life and you want to support them, you can actually get them a gift membership, And it's a really great way to, if you're already a member, help somebody else become a member as well. And the number to do that at is 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. You can also come into the office at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And we thank you so much for any amount that you're able to give. It really does make a difference. We are member supported. We are a community radio station, and you're a community, and we appreciate you supporting us.
And yes, give us a call, 877-500-5266, in support of our programming here at KBOO, a prison pipeline. Go online at kboo.fm. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson with my guest, Michael H. Fox of the Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network. We are discussing cases of women in Oregon who have been unfairly convicted and unfairly sentenced. I asked him to tell us about the case of Tammy Traxtel.
It's a very sad case. In 1996, Tammy Traxtel drove her brother from Corvallis to Salem to do a drug deal. In fact, she drove him to do a drug deal with her estranged husband from the time. In court, she testified that she didn't know that it was a drug deal, and that was her testimony, which she gave in court. She wasn't even sure who she was taking her brother to see, only that she would get a gift of a washing machine for transporting him. Well, as it turns out, they meet up with her estranged husband, and her brother Jeff goes off with her estranged husband to do the drug deal. The drug deal doesn't go as it had intended to be done, and her brother Jeff shot her former husband, Carlos. Well, whether Tammy was morally culpable or not, if you transport somebody in a drug deal and that person commits a further crime, legally, you're certainly culpable for that action. So, according to Tammy, the police came and offered her a plea bargain. Testify that you saw your brother shoot your ex-husband, and you will get an 18-month sentence. Well, Tammy could not testify to something she did not see. She took her chances, and she went to court, and she stood in front of a jury, and she was sentenced to 25 years to life. Once again, this goes to show the power of the plea bargain and the power prosecutors have over people's lives. Right now, Tammy has applied for a commutation from the governor, and we are hoping that her excellent record inside prison, helping women inside, doing every program possible, that 16 or 17 years out of a life sentence is enough punishment for the crime which she was tried.
One thing I wanted to clarify from what I had read about the crime, her brother had actually driven off in the car to go to see Carlos. So the reason she couldn't testify that she saw her brother shoot Carlos is because she was nowhere near where the crime had occurred. And this is a woman who had changed her life around outside of before she actually was incarcerated. So I'm sure you know more than I do.
Well, that's quite true. That's a very good question. In fact, she had a very unusual socialization. She ran away from her family and went to Mexico at a very young age, and she actually grew up in Mexico. She came back here. She was living on welfare. She decided to pull herself up by the bootstraps. She got her GED. She went to college. She had a very good job working at a courthouse. She was on welfare. She got off welfare, and she was taking care of herself. She met up with some former friends one day, told her former friends about what was going on. As it turns out, this event came back to haunt her. The police really had very little evidence against her to use in court. They knew that she drove the car in which her brother committed murder. But as it seems, when two of her former friends heard about this murder, they went to the police and they came up with these far-fetched stories that Tammy had met them previously in the mall in Albany and told them ahead of time of the murder, and that we were going to shoot her ex-husband Carlos in the face, and that they would take the gun and then throw the gun somewhere into a river. Well, as it turns out, these two women for some reason surfaced and came up with this very bizarre story. Where they came up with it, we don't know, but it's quite clear that women in that lower realm of society have people, have relatives, have boyfriends who are facing charges in the criminal justice system. And if you can go and do a favor to the prosecution, they will do a favor to you. So they came up with these lies about shooting him in the head and throwing the gun in the river. Well, the gun was not found in the river. The gun was found in another spot. So it's quite clearly perjury. So she was sent to jail on charges, mostly due to the perjury of two women who she had the unfortunate chance of meeting one Sunday in a mall.
What happened to the brother who actually...
Jeffrey Traxtel is serving a term of life without parole currently, and he's in the men's institution in Salem. It's also a very strange case because their father, Jeff Traxtel, actually came forward to try to take responsibility for this crime. He wanted to help his two children out. He went to police. He had found the handgun, which was not in the river, by the way, produced it for the police, somehow implicated himself in this crime. But the police knew better, and he actually had to go to jail for perjury. So it's a very long, involved, and a very sad case. Tammy got 25 years to life. As we know, in Oregon, 25 years to life means pretty much 25 years. Jeff, I believe, is doing life without parole.
Oh, and considering that she, you know, didn't know anything about the crime beforehand from what she's saying and what, of course, we believe, to have a woman who had gone through all that difficulty in her early life and had really turned her life around, and then this case, which basically implicated her in a way that, you know, she wasn't actually involved in the crime, and now she's serving 25 years. It's just amazing that this is what happens in our criminal justice system.
Yes, that's quite true. Once again, Tammy Traxtel is a woman who is pro-life, and she believes that if you get pregnant, you should have children. And she got pregnant, and she raised her children, and she pulled herself up by the bootstraps. And this is a woman who we should champion as a symbol for other women who live in distraught circumstances. But in the end, as it is, she, like Carlin Eklof, was viewed as an unfit mother. She had children from two different Mexican men, one of whom she was living with at the time. And the forces of law and order came down very hard on her.
And then the other thing about Tammy's case is that then weren't her children taken from her?
Yes, it's very, very sad. She was visiting with them during a prison visit, her three beautiful daughters. And her former husband, Carlos Quiroz, was married to a woman, Laura Quiroz, who worked for Child Protective Services, and she engineered a kind of a kidnapping right in the middle of a prison visit. It's really a very sad and pathetic situation. You could let the mother visit with the children, but to steal someone's children away right in the middle of a visit, this is just a really malevolent and mean thing to do, done on purpose.
And when was that, and do we know where the children are now?
We don't know exactly where they are. We're trying to find them and trying to be in touch with them. Tammy, of course, wants her children to know the true story of what happened, and we hope that sometime in the future they will reconcile. And if you're listening to this broadcast, please contact me through the website.
Yeah, and that's wcjn.org, and his email is wcjn.org@gmail.com.
That's correct.
Michael Fox. So another case of interest that's here in Oregon that you mentioned was Keisha Johnson.
This is a very disturbing case. Well, here is a question I'd like to pose to you, and I'd like to pose to your listeners. Imagine a man intends to rob a drug dealer. He's accompanied by a woman who knows ahead of the planned robbery. They enter the drug dealer's home together. The dealer and the man have done business together in the past. The two proceed into the kitchen. The man, instead of producing money, produces a gun and shoots the drug dealer three times in the head, and the dealer naturally dies. The man, at gunpoint, then robs two other people who are in the house. So the question is, the woman who accompanied him to the scene of the crime, and she could have anticipated that a robbery would happen, what, if any, crime should she be charged with? Amy, would you care to guess? Is that a crime if you follow somebody to a scene and you expect that they will rob somebody, and you do not participate in the robbery. You simply stand in.
Well, I suppose that there's the ideas of aiding and abetting, which means that in some way your action was aiding in assisting with that crime. Mm-hmm. So if she was in some way like planning ahead of time that she was going to be doing a robbery, then she may be aided and abetting in robbery.
Okay. But that's a very good analysis. From the point of view of the law, she could have been viewed, she is viewed perhaps as an accessory and in aiding and abetting. But the question is, should a woman like that be prosecuted? Is it necessary to prosecute her? She could cooperate as a state witness and tell the story of what happened. And quite often, she would get a suspended sentence because all she expected to do was see a robbery without participating in it. Well, in fact, the state came down on her with a fervor which is really unjust and terrible. They found her to be complicit in the murder, and she was sentenced to 32 years to life for just observing the scene of a robbery. This is unbelievable, and why the state came down so hard on her, I do not know. She is black, she's a mother of two children from two different men, and she was cavorting with a drug dealer. Well, she certainly is not guilty of murder. It doesn't even seem that she's guilty of burglary. But as the law goes, you take someone into court, you assassinate their character, and all of a sudden the jury will come down and say, oh, okay, yeah, she's guilty of murder. She's an accomplice. And now she gets sentenced to 32 years to life. So this is really a very sad case.
What happened to the person who actually committed the crime?
Yeah, I believe he received the exact same sentence. So they're both been sentenced to approximately 30 years to life.
Wow.
So the shooter and the accomplice, it's a terrible imbalance.
Is that something that across the country people are tried in this way, or is it something that
Indeed it is. Well, if you looked through all the crimes, all the women who are incarcerated in the United States right now, 200,000 women, you would find that most are doing time for men's crimes. They're doing time for crimes which were instigated by men, and most of them were just somehow, they were viewed as accomplices, or they were just around in the wrong place at the wrong time, as Carlin Eklof was in the preceding example that we talked about. So guilt by association is really enough to put a good woman away, well, almost forever. Just the fact that our society believes that men are allowed to run and prey and do bad things, but the women who run with the wolves are guilty of the kill. The female is supposed to stay at home and guard the nest, and the man can go out and do as he pleases. So it's really a very sad situation that we have here in the United States, and indeed in many other places.
And a couple of things before we get too far about Kaisha Johnson's case. The judge was found to be biased in the most recent appeals that were made.
That's quite true, yes. If you read through the trial transcripts, you will quickly see that the judge is sometimes acting as a prosecutor and asking questions of Kaisha, which is very non-typical for a judge to do. A judge is supposed to be the arbiter of fact. But in fact, the judge was almost acting as a second prosecutor, overruling all the objections made by the defense. This case is just a real sore on the state of Oregon and on justice here.
Is that cause for a mistrial if a judge is doing something like that? Or,
well,
like,
it could be cause for a mistrial. And in fact, in her appeals, her lawyers did file papers showing that the judge was biased. But it's very, very difficult to overturn a criminal trial in the United States. Unless DNA evidence, of course, has overturned a lot of trials, but otherwise people put it down as harmless error. So I feel very bad for Kaisha.
And this is Karen and Amy back at Pledge Central asking you to call right now, 877-500-5266. as you can hear these three women who are down at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility right now in Wilsonville, their stories. Amy and I are feel very passionate about bringing you these, their voices, their stories. And Amy, you're a new host here at Prison Pipeline. Tell the listeners, how did you get involved with Prison Pipeline, or why did you get involved with KBOO?
Yeah, great. This is something I love talking about, because one of the really unique things about KBOO that you can support when you call 877-500-5266 or make a donation online at kboo.fm is our free journalistic training. I learned how to use all of the equipment here at KBOO through free trainings that I paid for through volunteering here, and I'm passionate about issues in the criminal justice system because I have a brother who's incarcerated, and so that's why I personally wanted to be involved in Prison Pipeline. And it's really amazing that as a community member, I can come and learn how to use the equipment and get on the airwaves in order to bring stories that are not typically heard on the air. And that's something you can do too, and it's something that you can support when you call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. You're part of this community. We really appreciate your support, and it's so important that you give right now. 83% of our revenue, our income is directly from individuals. We get it from any amount that you donate to us. Most of the donations are small. There's only 17% from other sources, and it's mostly underwriting from local organizations and businesses. So we really appreciate you calling in at 877-500-5266 and making any donation that you can today. You know, a $60 donation is a great level to start off at as a first-time supporter. If you're already a contributor, thank you so much for giving again right now.
Yeah, and that's $5 a month, $60 a year. That's doable, and we would appreciate it. We here at Prison Pipeline would love to hear from you. We would love to hear why you listen to Prison Pipeline, why it is important to you. Please give us a call, 877-500-5266.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson with my guest, Michael H. Fox. We are discussing the cases of Carlin Eckloff, Tammy Traxtel, and Kaisha Johnson, who have all been convicted of murders here in Oregon, though they did not plan or commit those crimes. I asked how the juries were convinced these women should be found guilty.
In certainly the cases of Carlin and Tammy, you had people get up on the stand and lie. You had people just perjuring themselves. People look at these others sitting and speaking in court, and they believe that they're telling the truth. Later, you find out that this man, Alvin Hope, the child molester, perjured himself. Two women perjured themselves in Tammy's trial. And in Keisha's case, it's just basically a simple case of, well, she was at the robbery and a lot of character assassination. She was a mother. She was on welfare. She had been using drugs. She had children from different marriages. Well, she must be guilty of something. This is another problem, is that the prosecution comes in and they just make it seem, well, she must be guilty of something, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. One thing that we see in criminal trials so often, which is very hard to persuade juries, when people sit in a jury and they see a prosecutor and the prosecutor reads an opening statement and they see him all dressed up and they say, well, we wouldn't be here if this person was innocent, would we? That person must have done something. So the numbers of true cases that come out not guilty is really very, very small. And because the system is so unbalanced, you have 96% of people in this country taking plea bargains, although many of them are innocent, but just understand if they were to go and fight in court, they would lose. And in these two cases of Carlin Eckloff and Tammy Traxtel, had they taken plea bargains, they would both have been out years ago.
It's kind of amazing that that's how our criminal justice system works, because we're raised with the idea that if something happens, you're entitled to a trial with jurors of your peers, and it would be fair, and you're innocent until proven guilty. But
in fact, the opposite is true.
Yeah.
So legally, you're innocent until proven guilty. Factually, sociologically, you're really guilty, and you have to go out and prove your innocence. I'm also concerned with the case of a woman named Alicia Myers. She was sentenced to life without parole for a crime committed at the age of 18 years and 10 days. So she was 10 days past being beyond being a minor, and the prosecution actually asked for death in this case. This is another issue people have here in Oregon. It's considered by many people to be a progressive state, but when we look at the criminal justice system, we see all these imbalances. We see all this unjustness. I mean, if we compare the women we've talked about so far, there was a man whose name was Chris Weston, who, I believe in 2007, received a sentence of 52 months, just over 4 years, for murdering his pregnant girlfriend. And I checked with the Department of Corrections. He has been released. So we see all these contradictions here, and they're just really terrible. We have to ask, why are women getting smashed under the hammer in this state? Another case, a man whose name was Oscar Pena. He admitted to committing a double murder, and he will be eligible for parole after 25 years. Karlin Ekloff right now has a sentence of no parole. So why do we have so many contradictions here? What is happening?
You're definitely showing the disparities between the sentencing of women and men here in Oregon. How does this compare to other states?
Actually, Oregon is not the worst state in the union in terms of unfair sentencing for women. I would say that that honor belongs to Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, if you are convicted of second-degree murder, which means you're an accessory or an accomplice to a crime, you will receive life without parole. And this is a terrible thing. I just participated in a rally with many other people to try to get a parole for a woman whose name was Avis Lee. Avis Lee was a lookout in a murder. Well, in her view, it was a robbery which turned to murder. She was a lookout. She was outside the scene of the crime, but she was convicted of second-degree murder. Second-degree murder, I'm not a lawyer. I can't really say, but I believe might be 10 years in the state of Oregon. In Pennsylvania, that's life without parole, and there are all these women doing life without parole for second-degree murder. So this is a really hideous case and a really bad system. Philadelphia calls itself the city of brotherly love. We sometimes say it should be the city of sisterly hate.
Is this a problem in many other countries as well?
I believe it's a problem in many other countries. I've been in Thailand, and I was talking to women in prisons in Thailand. So many women who just get found guilty of selling drugs, for example, who don't use drugs, but who sell drugs and get very, very long sentences, 7 or 8 years in a prison for selling drugs, just small amounts. And they were mostly accomplices or to men who were higher up on the totem pole, and they're the ones who seem to get smashed. I can talk as well about Japan, actually, and cases there that I know of where, yeah, accomplices, people like Carl and Tammy, women who had children and who are not really living in the typical nuclear family, who get divorced and who are raising kids by themselves, and they meet the wrong man, and all of a sudden, certainly they're charged with murder, even in cases where no murder happened. One case that I know of is an arson case. It's an accidental fire, and she was charged with murder.
Are there any countries or places in the world that are kind of beacons of hope where people are not being tried as accessories or?
Well, yes, I would guess that in many countries, I've spoken with Canadian jurists before. They are often quite shocked at what they see in the United States. In the future, I actually hope to ask prosecutors in Switzerland and maybe in Great Britain, in Australia, to look at these different cases, and even in Japan, to see what they would get. I am absolutely sure that none of the women we've talked about would have gotten these severe sentences in other countries based on the evidence at hand. So really, America is, the criminal justice system here has just become dreadful.
And this is Karen, and I'm here with Amy and Pledge Central again. We are both hosts of Prison Pipeline, and we are hearing the interviews with Michael H. Fox of Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network. And he is talking about excessively charged, wrongfully convicted, and unfairly sentenced women who are serving time right now in Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville. And often these women, you know, they are victims. They become involved. Often a man does commit the crime, or a woman has children. There's just many reasons that we get involved with who we get involved with, and but they are victims in relationships, and then they find themselves re-victimized by our criminal justice system as they go through the process and end up in jail for very long mandatory minimum sentencing laws, decades behind bars. And especially in Oregon, a woman who does pick up a bat or a knife or a gun to protect herself and her children, if you pick up a weapon and harm someone with a weapon in Oregon, it is an automatic Measure 11, which is a mandatory minimum sentencing law of 60 months. It starts at over 5 years, almost 6 years. And we have to begin to understand what this does to a family, a community, our society, when children are taken away from women. Women are sent to prison for very long periods of time. Often they don't know where their children are. And that's why we're bringing you this programming today. And if you feel this program is important and you would like to hear more of this type of programming on KABU, on Prison Pipeline, please give us a call, 877-500-5266, or surf on over to our website, kboo.fm. And, you know, Michael Fox talks about the conditions at the prisons. There are a number of programs in Coffee Creek Correctional Facility for the women, but often women enter Coffee Creek and they suffer from post-traumatic stress, PTSD, and it takes a very long time, if ever, to begin to even participate in these programs. There's volunteers at the prisons, but we need more. In Oregon, about 60% of prisoners don't receive visitors. And Coffee Creek Correctional Facility is right in Wilsonville, right in our backyard. There's so much that we can be doing to help these women. But give us a call. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear how you feel about Prison Pipeline, what type of programming you would like to hear. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
We've got some great thank you gifts. If you do call in right now, The Punishment Imperative, The Rise and Failure of Mass Incarceration in America. It's a book. We've got two copies of it. It's a really great thank you gift to get a $60 pledge level. That's $5 a month for a year-long commitment. And, you know, you don't have to just take it from us that these types of stories are important and that local media, community media like KABU is important. Here's Michael Fox to tell you in his own words.
I believe community media is the main source of support for local people. We're dealing with issues right inside the state of Oregon right now. We're dealing with cases that are occurring here. We have a massive problem at a nearby prison, not very far from here. And so local media is the best way to make appeals for local people. The national media, of course, is always very nervous about making appeals for people who have been wrongfully convicted. They have to be, at times they try to be unbiased, but in fact, they become very wishy-washy. in their coverage of cases. So local media like KBOO Radio, like these wonderful small magazines you have here, which are available for free in coffee shops, these are wonderful places for getting the information out and shining the light on injustice.
At KBOO, we know stories like this matter to you. So do what you can to support vital news sources like KBOO. Go online to kboo.fm, click on the tip jar and make a secure, quick online donation, or give us a call at 877-500-5266. Your support makes programs like Prison Pipeline possible. We appreciate all that you're able to do to support us right now during our fall membership drive. It's really important to have the community involved like this. And if you care about these issues, please also consider coming in and becoming a volunteer at KBOO. Thank you again for supporting. And the number to call is 877-500-5266.
One factor that we see in American criminal justice that we don't see, for example, in Canada, is a win-at-all-costs mentality. America has this, pathological attachment to being number one, to winning. America is about winning. And this occurs in the criminal justice system on a daily basis. We should be looking at the pursuit of justice, both for the state, for the victims, for criminals, for society, but in fact, we're just looking at one side wanting everything and wanting to win, where prosecution could even be viewed as a kind of sport.
There was something that I read when I was researching for an interview, which a prosecutor said, well, if she's found eventually to be guilty, that just proves that I'm a very good prosecutor.
Famous Texas case. Yeah, that's very good. I believe that's the case of Darla Routier, which is one of the worst miscarriages of justice in the United States right now. She is a woman who is on death row in Texas. It's believed that her husband perhaps hired a hitman to kill her. This man came into the house, stabbed and killed her son, and then stabbed her while she was sitting on a couch late at night. He came in, took a knife out of the kitchen, and proceeded to commit the crime. It's quite obviously he knew the house, he knew where the weapon was, and he knew how to get out. She missed having her, I believe what it's called, the carotid artery in her neck smashed by about 2 millimeters, which is just the short whiteness you have on your end of your fingertip. Mm-hmm. She was all cut up. You can go on the internet and see pictures of her in the hospital. And she was found guilty of murder and is now on death row. And this is a complete tragedy of justice.
The murder of her son.
The murder of her son, right. She's there. And it seems as if the only evidence against her was after she cried her eyes out at the grave, she took some silly string and sprayed it on top of the grave afterward. And this was shown in court to show how bad a woman she is. She's not grieving, she's happy. Do you have to do something to alleviate the horror of losing a child? So it's a real tragedy of justice. And let that prosecutor who thinks he's so great, I hope he hears this interview and listens in and changes his attitude.
Again, what can people who are listening that want to do something about crimes like this, what types of actions can they take?
Well, there's so much to do, really, from doing little things to doing big things. Doing little things, helping out women who are in prison, write to them, send them cards, tell them you're not alone, I believe in you. Go and visit these people. It's very easy to visit people in prison in the United States. You get on their list. You can visit them. You start a petition site. Start a website for somebody who's wrongfully convicted. My website clearly says that if you know of a woman who's wrongfully convicted, send me the information. I will build a web page for that woman. The important thing to know is that doing something is more important than doing nothing. And to say that, well, I can't do anything. Well, you can do something. You could lecture at your church. You could go and speak at a civic center. You could hand out information, make brochures for someone who's wrongfully convicted. At the end of your emails, write, Free Carlin Eckloff and put a website in for that person. So spread the word, spread the knowledge, spread the consciousness, and listen to good radio shows like this as well.
Michael's website, it's wcjn.org, and that's for the Worldwide Women's Criminal Justice Network. And if you want to email him, his email address is wcjn.org@gmail.com. And again, that's Michael Fox. And
thank you
so much for being with me and sharing all this information about
this. Thank you, Amy. As I do a lot of work in Oregon, it's a real pleasure to speak here in the state about these cases. I've frequently spoken about them at academic associations, for example, the American Society of Criminology. Mm. And well, when you come here and speak about them, you really hit close to home. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Michael H. Fox. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
Fight the Power on KBOO. That's the theme of this year's News and Public Affairs Day, this Friday, October 10th, from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Highlights include Nation magazine columnist Katha Pollitt talking about her new book, Pro Reclaiming Abortion Rights, and the ALEC Project, an investigation of Oregon legislation which has been influenced or created by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. So fight the power and support KBOO. That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Yeah, you are tuned right now to KBOO Portland, your listener-owned community radio station, 90.7 FM, right here in the Portland area. And do not attempt to adjust your dial, because you are being taken into the Sun Ra Zone from now until the wee hours of tomorrow morning. We are celebrating the centennial of Mr. Sun Ra's appearance on the planet Earth. And as I heard someone say earlier today, at some point in the evening, the mysteries of the universe may be revealed. But first, let's hear Mr. Ra with a song entitled A Street Named Hell. The